What is up, freaks? It's Odell here. I got another in-person rip, this time from Lugano, audio only. We got a good friend here, absolute legend, Francis. How's it going, Francis?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Have you ever been on Dispatch?
Dude, I've been on the Dispatch with Marty, I think, like, I don't know, like 6 years ago, was
that? Marty's show, right?
I don't remember.
Oh, no, we did it together in 2019.
At the Bitcoin conference in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so we've gotten a lot done since then.
Oh, yeah.
That day was the day Marty found out he was having his first kid. I remember, and then we got trashed on the roof.
Yeah, I think we got trashed before the rip also.
We were drinking, yeah.
During the rip, too.
And Bitcoin topped at 13K that day.
Yeah, yeah.
And I told everyone to smash buy. And for 2 years, we were under 13K. Oh, and everyone said I was a fucking idiot.
Yeah, well, who's the idiot now?
Now we're just a humble 10x since then. Okay, so I got a couple topics for us. Let's just dive right in. First topic, you guys released the new self-custody Bull Bitcoin wallet.
Yeah.
Fucking awesome. I've been playing with it. So, to the freaks that haven't used it yet, first of all, you can download it in your favorite app store at Bull Wallet. Just search Bull Wallet, or you can go to wallet.bullbitcoin.com. But what is the wallet? Why should people care?
Yeah, so the wallet is a typical classic Bitcoin wallet is the core of it. So we're using BDK under the hood, the Bitcoin Dev Kit. I've been involved with the Bitcoin Dev Kit project for like almost like 3 years.
Yeah, they're awesome.
They're really awesome. What makes the Bull wallet, I guess, special or different or part of like a new wave of Bitcoin wallet, which is, by the way, like one of the hot topics of this conference. It's like that we call them like the next generation wallets, is that actually originally I wanted to do an LDK wallet. Originally, my goal was to have a full blown, like Phoenix style, fully self-custodial, like Lightning node on your phone wallet. So that's actually how we started.
Right.
And we started to build on LDK, and then I got a little bit blackpilled on Lightning because of that, because like Lightning does a lot of things like really well. Like Lightning is really phenomenal, but there are things that you simply cannot abstract away with Lightning. And you know, I don't have to go into the details, but it's got to do with the liquidity management, right?
Yeah.
Like the backup stuff, that's fine. Like running a node on your phone is fine. It's doable. It's just the liquidity management. And also there's like, it's not just technical. There's like economic components to it. Like, let's say, all right, I'm a developer. I want to launch a wallet. I need to find an LSP, of course, right? And imagine like you have 1,000 users with $1,000 worth of channels. Yeah. You have $1 million of liquidity that needs to be locked up by an LSP. Doable. But once you get to 100,000 users or 1 million users, you're talking about a fuck ton of money. Anyway.
Yeah, capital management.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm like, all right, so the LDK wallet's not happening. So what
if really Phoenix has been the only one who's too close to pulling it off.
Fucking legends, man, because what they're doing is like really, really, really hard. And also I honestly didn't think that we were gonna be able to do what Phoenix did. Like they're exceptionally good.
Their node is I don't know how many millions of dollars is on their node right now.
I'm pretty sure it's the biggest node on the network. I think Async is probably the biggest node.
But I just feel like that's an important thing to just iron in here, because if the freaks are like me, I've run a ton of Lightning nodes, 24/7 mm-hmm. Lightning nodes in my life. I still run a couple, mostly because I need like 24/7 uptime or whatever for certain tasks, including getting sats. Mm-hmm. They support the show with sats. But my go-to wallet on a day-to-day basis has been Phoenix. Right, mm-hmm. I take a single CoinJoin UTXO, drop it, a big UTXO. It works better with bigger UTXOs. Drop it into Phoenix, and then I just make my payments as I need to. And now that the Bull wallet's out, I find myself sitting there. I'm like, which one do I use going forward?
Mm-hmm.
It's a different trade-off balance, but it's filling a similar need for me, right? Which is just, I want to top up my eSIM or I want to send a quick Lightning payment, and I could easily just open the Bull wallet and make the payment. So
Phoenix works now. The reason why I got blackpilled is actually because I was at the El Salvador conference in 2023, exactly during the first ordinal fee wave, and I'm onboarding a guy to Phoenix in El Salvador. And I'm like, I'm going to send you your first payment.
Right.
Right. And then what Phoenix does is called a just-in-time channel. It will open a channel at the same time as the guy's receiving money. So I'm sending the guy $5.
He's doing an on-chain transaction.
Yes, but the fees were like 175, I don't know, sats per byte or something. Right. So the fee to open the channel...
It was $4 or something.
No, way more.
Yeah.
Way more. Like $30 or something like that, right? So like the pure Phoenix model works well economically when the fees are low.
I guess even right now where fees are basically zero, it's still like 60 cents or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I'm like, you know, in my bed in the middle of the night and I'm just like fucking, oh my God, like, are we going to have to do a custodial wallet? I'm like freaking out because, you know, for people who like don't know me, I'm like, you know, Mr. Self-Custody, right?
So like no custodial ever.
No custodial ever. And that's always been like my North Star. It's like self-custody at all costs. Like everything I do is to support or facilitate self-custody. And I'm like, how the fuck are we going to do that? So that's when the idea of using the Liquid Network came in, right? So, and I think a lot of people had the same idea pretty much around the same time. And that same time is literally like the Ordinals spam wave. So it's not a coincidence, because we all kind of like felt the same kind of like problem that I was having with the just-in-time like LDK, like full Lightning node model. And so the idea was, all right, so let's build a Bitcoin wallet that has a Bitcoin wallet inside and a Liquid Network wallet inside. The thing with the Liquid Network is that there's nobody else using it, right? So there's no merchants using the Liquid Network. They're all using the Lightning Network. So somehow we needed to find a way to move value between the Liquid Network and whatever other wallet the person was using. And that's where this company came in called Bolts. So Bolts, my fucking favorite company in Bitcoin. They're absolute legends. They're absolutely amazing. So what these guys did is they built an API that creates a non-custodial atomic swap between various networks and Lightning, between Bitcoin and Lightning, between Liquid and Lightning, between Rootstock and Lightning, and now between Arc and Lightning, right? So Liquid was the first iteration. So
people don't realize Rootstock is actually decently used by degens in Latin America.
Like
I found that out when I went to Brazil.
Rootstock has some, probably, I think like more volume than Liquid itself actually.
Because like in the West, in America, like I thought Rootstock, I forget, that was like something that I heard of like 6 years
ago. It's a thing. It's a thing. It's real. So Bull Bitcoin, it's a Bitcoin wallet and a Liquid wallet. And then when you send and receive, there's a non-custodial atomic Lightning swap. And that's really
interesting. It's like Moon, but with Liquid.
That's exactly it. Yeah. It's like Moon, but with Liquid and without the retarded backup that, you know, system that Moon invented.
Right, just use a seed backup.
Yeah. And like for us, we are obsessed with standardization also in the wallet. So even here, one of the reasons I'm here is to help kind of like figure out stuff with Arc to make sure that all the Arc wallets that are popping up like really quickly are on the same standard. So we have we're here specifically to also partly build standards for Arc.
We'll talk about Arc in a second. Yeah. Let's continue on this wallet.
Yeah. So and then my goal, you know, so like people know, man, I'm an OG, I'm like a cypherpunk. So the wallet that I build a product that I want to use, right? So I'm at this point in my Bitcoin journey where I've done a lot of stuff and now I want to do something for me. Like the wallet is a very ego, it's a fully ego driven project, right? So first of all, I want to build something for me that I really want to use personally. I also kind of consider it to be almost like performance art or something like that, or like I want that to be like what people remember me for,
like a legacy thing.
I want that to be my legacy because the Bull Bitcoin exchange will close one day. You know, it's a fiat business. It's literally an exchange is a fucking, it's the most fiat business ever. All you do is deal with
hyper Bitcoinization. We're not touching fiat.
So yeah, of course. And like an open source Bitcoin wallet will hopefully like outlast me, and at the very least, the code will always exist and people in a thousand years are probably going to, you know, I'm going to probably inscribe a copy of the source code on my tomb or something, you know, it's going to be my legacy. So I wanted it to be kind of like very easy to use, but also super cypherpunk. So the concept of the wallet is to make it sexy and UX friendly, but also have cypherpunk features inside it. Right. So my goal with the wallet, for example, is for it to be kind of like a Sparrow substitute for mobile. Right. So imagine Sparrow is kind of like the gold standard of the desktop wallet because it gives you control.
Yeah, we love Sparrow.
Right? So Sparrow is amazing because you can control everything. You have very good coin selection and labeling. Of course, you can connect your own node. And of course, with Sparrow, you can connect your hardware wallet.
Yep.
Right? So it's got the coin selection. It's got the hardware wallet. It's got your own node. They had privacy features. They had Whirlpool in there. You can do operations with descriptors. Yep. You can update your core card. It's like a sovereign individual toolbox. That's what Sparrow is.
It's like a piece of software that is all my projects and companies and my family relies on.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Foundational piece of desktop software. No second best. It doesn't even come close.
No, exactly. You know, and like you have like Electrum, which is kind of there too. You know, but I personally use Sparrow just because it's I showed Sparrow to my mom, by the way, and. She finds it very intuitive.
That's what's cool about it. Is like for a power user, it has literally everything you could ever need.
Yeah.
But for the average person, they can figure it out and use it.
And that's what I want to do for mobile. Yeah. That's what I want to do for mobile. And that's the goal of the Bull Bitcoin wallet. And you know, so some of the things that kind of made us stand out, like we were the first wallet to integrate PayJoin V2. We were kind of like the reckless version of PayJoin. Yeah. It's gonna get way better. Like PayJoin, the new version of the last like stable version of PayJoin like is coming out. It was pretty reckless to do that on mobile, to be honest. But it worked. Like PayJoin actually did work. We have like
the PayJoin piece is still a little bit rough around the edges, right?
It is. Yeah.
Even in like test environments.
And it's also incompatible with like there's like breaking changes to the PayJoin protocol. But we've literally just they launched the version 1.0.0 of PayJoin like last week. So PayJoin is basically going to become stable and standardized starting basically now. So for example, the other companies that like Cake, for example, and Bull, Cake is the other wallet that introduced PayJoin.
Yeah.
Right? We were like on incompatible versions of PayJoin, so we couldn't actually
PayJoin each other.
Yeah. Okay. Because PayJoin kept making these changes.
The wallet would detect that it was a PayJoin compatible wallet, but it wouldn't make the transaction.
Okay. And PayJoin also has like a server component to it.
So. And same with Wasabi. Wasabi is the other one that supports it, I think, right?
Yeah, but Wasabi
couldn't get it to work with Wasabi.
Incompatible versions.
Okay,
yeah.
So it was a little
reckless. But yeah. So
I mean, it doesn't matter. It's not like any funds are lost. The transaction doesn't work.
Right. And like, of course, I also wanted to have a privacy first wallet. And it's like when people think about privacy wallets, they think like, oh, so you don't have CoinJoin? No. There's other aspects to it. Like so. No push notifications, like zero data collection whatsoever. Right. There's like all sorts of.
That's where Phoenix really falls flat. They do a lot of like the
So
new age dev, iOS, Android tricks where they're doing like push notifications, cloud backups.
Yeah, no, and the Bull Bitcoin dev team, specifically the ones that work on the wallet, are very strict, very severe in terms of like dependency on like servers and stuff like that. So of course, like now what we have, okay. So what we have, I've actually been using it for like 2.5 years.
Okay.
We're on version 6.2 now. But we came to a point where I was like comfortable promoting it. Right.
Right.
I mean, we actually got like 10,000 users just through, over the last 2 years, literally not trying. To push it because it was, you know, there's bugs, right?
Yeah.
There's no catastrophic lose your money bugs, but you know, there's like shitty UX bugs, right?
Yeah.
But now we reached a point where we're like, okay, we're ready to start like commercializing it. So yeah, what we recently announced was the iOS launch. iOS was actually very hard. Spiritually, even it took us a long time to get iOS Apple to approve it. I have like 250 emails back and forth.
It's a traumatic experience.
Yeah, I almost gave up.
Yeah,
I almost gave up. Yeah. So what else is there to say?
But I mean, it's a pain in the ass working with Apple on the App Store. But if you want like an actual massively used wallet.
You got to meet people where they are,
and it needs to be on both because from a recommendation point of view, I mean, you've been doing this as long as me.
Yeah.
As soon as I have to ask, like, oh, are you using Android or iPhone, and then recommend a different wallet for them, it breaks apart. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
Being able to say like download Primal,
for sure.
Just doesn't matter where it is, or download Bull Wallet,
mm-hmm.
is absolutely key. Okay, so what I want to talk about real quick is, so you're using Liquid. It's like Moon. The freaks know Moon because I was shilling Moon like crazy. We're at rest, but instead of with Moon, at rest, it sits on the Liquid network. Mm-hmm. And then you're doing on-demand swaps. First, a comment. I really like how in the wallet, you say you have the on-chain wallet, which is you call it secure Bitcoin, and then instant payments, which I think is just immediately intuitive. It's like, okay, I'm not keeping my life savings in instant payments. I'm keeping that in the secure wallet. And so I really like that framing. I think it, you don't have to explain it to the user. A lot of people in the past have like called it like checking versus savings accounts. Mm-hmm. But where we're going, most people don't know what checkings and savings accounts are, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really good framing. So good job on that. Liquid is something that for probably like 10 years now, I've fallen into the hype cycle of Liquid maybe 4 or 5 times. Where like, mm-hmm. this is the moment that Liquid's actually going to be used. Mm-hmm. I feel like this might be it, but I've been there before. The big issue that people have with Liquid, we've talked about this in the past, and I just want to be clear with it is a collaborative custody model. So it's a multi-sig federation. You can't leave on demand. You need permission to leave. If the Bolts is down, you can't get out of Liquid. How do you think about that? As like you said, you know, you want to reduce dependencies.
Yeah.
Does that keep you up at night? That you have a bunch of users that are in Liquid, maybe they're not able to get out. What are the mitigations there?
This is probably my favorite topic to discuss in the entire world. And I'm just going to do a quick shout out to Roy from Breeze, which also is a very forward thinking person in terms of rethinking custody versus trustlessness, right? Yeah. So technically, Liquid is self-custodial, like on a technical level, like you own the LBTC asset, right? But of course,
you're self-custodying the IRU.
It's like, it's not trustless, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you have a Tether on your, I don't know, whatever, fuck, like Ethereum wallet, right? Yeah, your trust wallet, you are self-custodying Tether. But of course, Tether, the organization, is the one at the end of the day, which is guaranteeing the peg,
right?
And the peg is guaranteed because Tether will send you a fiat wire transfer in exchange for your USDT coin. At some point, there is a redeemer of last resort, right?
I would go so far as to say, like, it's impossible to self-custody, like, Tron or something.
Because
it's just a centralized network. So at the end of the day, there's trust in Justin Sun.
Right? Yeah. And they are certainly not trustless. So the way that I see Liquid, I see it as a Bitcoin stablecoin.
Right.
Kind of, right? So it's a stable coin. It's another coin, which is backed one-to-one by Bitcoin. And the job of the Liquid Federation is to guarantee the peg.
Right.
It's not, and they guarantee the peg by custodying an amount of Bitcoin, which is equivalent to the amount of Liquid Bitcoin, right, in a multisig. So from a strict technical perspective, they're not custodying your Bitcoin. They're guaranteeing a one-to-one peg between your Liquid Bitcoin And that is...
And uptime. They're guaranteeing peg and uptime, right?
And there actually is a legal distinction also here, where I don't think legally that Liquid is a custodian. I think legally the Liquid network, for example, and that has to do with, you know, KYC regulation how to like avoid that. So Liquid actually like somehow has a very clever way to avoid being... there's no KYC AML on Liquid. Like it's a blockchain, right? Quote unquote. The thing that I really liked about Liquid is that it exists,
right,
and that it works, right? So it's really easy to criticize something and say that another model could be better, but the other model doesn't exist, whereas the existing model works. Right. And the way that I see it, so there is a scale here, right? There's two axes. There's the Y axis and the X axis. And the way I see it, there's a UX and compromise matrix, right? And by compromise, I mean compromising on core cypherpunk values of self-custody, of privacy, of trustlessness and permissionlessness, right? So typically what a company will do is that they will compromise on the cypherpunk ethos in order to gain UX points, right? That's, and it's almost like, and think of like the Coinbases and the BitPays and all of these, you know, people, they very quickly compromise to gain marginal UX points.
Good UX, yeah.
Right. Whereas I have the, and there's like these dots on the matrix where I think what I want to do is I have a certain level of compromise over which I will not walk the line, and I need to stay under this compromise level, but I want to increase my UX points under this compromise level. It's hard for the freaks to see that because I'm literally waving with my hands right now, and I'm like trying to make you imagine a chart. But Liquid is for me orders of magnitude more secure than like Wallet Satoshi,
right?
And you know, orders of magnitude more secure than Cashew, orders of magnitude more secure than Fedi, and now. And it exists and it works. Okay, so
Maybe not Fedi.
I mean, technically,
depends on what the Fedi. There's probably
how it's implemented.
Fedi, right?
So the thing is, how it's implemented actually makes a difference, right? So technically, you could have like a Fedi that has 15 very professionally run.
Right, we just
like,
don't have it yet.
We just don't have that yet, yeah. Right? So again, like Liquid exists, I obviously. My fear with using the wallets was that people were accidentally going to confuse Liquid with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It's really hard to not cognitively overwhelm a person, but also not mislead them at the same time. It's very, very difficult.
Yep.
And it requires a lot of finesse in UX. And thank you for saying, I actually spent a lot of time trying to figure that one out.
It's good, like, instant payments versus secure Bitcoin.
And you know, like a common balance, but also two separate balances that I'd have to look at. It's tough. So one of the things that I did is the auto swap. I think the auto swap is the fucking greatest feature of the Bull Bitcoin wallet. As soon as the auto swap is 1 million sats by default, and then as soon as you reach 1 million sats on Liquid, the next time you open the wallet, it will auto swap into Bitcoin on chain. So that there's like a mechanism to prevent people from accidentally.
Interesting.
Because you're not really supposed to have more than $500 in the Liquid wallet, or like 1,000, or maybe like a couple thousand. If you're, I don't know, it depends on what you're spending, you know.
It depends. The hard part is it's like a percentage of your stack.
Yeah, of course.
So it's on a case by case basis, right?
And like, you know, if you're like a rich guy, you know, and you're spending Bitcoin, you know, I spend thousands of dollars of Bitcoin a month. You know,
so you have 10K in the Liquid wallet, no big deal.
No big deal. Like, it's not, you know, it's my monthly budget for like groceries and my rent.
But I like that auto swap concept.
Yeah.
In general, this is also what I've been pushing for in the Cashew space.
Yeah.
Is like, you use Cashew for convenience,
yeah.
But then move the user into a more secure setup automatically.
Yeah. So we need to make choices for the user. And I know it's kind of patronizing, but defaults matter and like these things matter because one of the reasons why Bull Bitcoin is non-custodial in the first place is because, you know, companies that are like custodial Bitcoin exchanges, they're going to say, yeah, but we're encouraging people to withdraw to a self-custody wallet, but they don't. They just don't. They just leave it in the custodial wallet. So that's, I didn't want that to happen with Liquid, even though I think Liquid is secure enough for me to be able to sleep at night. The auto swap thing, it's like, okay, now I feel really comfortable because like, I know that the worst that can happen to a user is that they lose like 1 million sats. Which is like not a trivial amount of money, but also like, you know,
it's not the end of the world.
It's not the end of the world.
You can claw your way out of that.
Yeah. And Liquid has,
and they probably won't anyway, like Liquid, one of the biggest things Liquid has going for it is just what, like 10 years, 12 years of uptime and reputation.
It's relatively well organized also. Like Liquid is not, it's not, and there's nothing wrong with like a bunch of dudes doing that in their basement. There's nothing wrong with that. That's cool and that's great. But Liquid actually has, you know, we have committees, we have boards, we it's institutionalized and it's a little bureaucratic. It's a little annoying actually, because it's kind of bureaucratic. And then you have Blockstream as a company, which doesn't control Liquid, but Blockstream, I would say, is kind of like the secretary of Liquid. So Blockstream, they will like, you know, send you, you know, calendar invites to like the meetings and stuff like that, you know, and like they make sure like the functionaries and everything are talking to each other when it's time to update the software and that kind of stuff. But I'm not satisfied with Liquid, of course. Like Liquid, I don't want Bitcoin. I don't want Liquid to be the model of Bitcoin, of course. Right. So there is one thing interesting with Liquid, which I kind of like discovered, is that when you're buying Bitcoin, you should always, regardless of the amount, I think you should buy them on Liquid. Liquid has a very nice feature called confidential transactions. The reason we don't have that on Bitcoin is that it doesn't scale at all. It's a very large transaction in size. It's like 6,000 bytes for a transaction. But of course, the benefit of centralization with Liquid is also that you get scale, you get low fees, which you, obviously that's the reason why Bitcoin is so amazing. It's that it's decentralized, and that's why Bitcoin doesn't scale. Because if you scale Bitcoin by like increasing the block sizes, you centralize Bitcoin. Liquid doesn't have that. Liquid is centralized by default, so you can do stuff on Liquid that makes it scale.
And a lot of people start using Liquid, and blocks start filling
up. Fucking increase the block size. Exactly. You know, it's fine. It's a 15 functionaries.
Blockstream will send an event invite, and then you guys
we'll just run the soft fork. You know, whatever. Yeah. We'll run the hard fork or whatever. Yeah. It's fine. But it has confidential transactions. So imagine what you want to prevent when you're buying Bitcoin is you want to minimize your on-chain traceability. And it's not like, you know, a fuck the state thing. It's also like, I don't want to get the kidnap thing. Yeah. And I don't want people to know how much money I have thing. And when I go to the store and I'm paying for coffee, you know, which doesn't happen on Lightning, but like, I don't want the coffee shop owner to like know how much Bitcoin I have. Or if I buy like, I don't know, a used motorcycle at the store, like I don't want to send from my stash and the guy seeing that I have like, you know, 10 Bitcoins in my wallet.
Yeah, so the example I always use is like, your boss shouldn't know what you're spending your salary on.
Of course.
And the guy you're buying a sandwich from shouldn't know your salary.
Exactly.
Like, these are basic financial privacy primitives.
Of course.
Understand.
So if you get paid with either Liquid directly or the Bolt swap, like Lightning to Liquid, you end up with funds in your Liquid wallet, whatever. When you swap that to your secure Bitcoin wallet, like the on-chain wallet, there is no more on-chain trail between the funds that end up in your Bitcoin wallet and the funds that you got paid from. So it's kind of like the way that people will like swap to Monero or something, right? You know, it's like, oh yeah, well, you swap to Monero and come back to Bitcoin. Well, that's kind of like what you can do with Liquid. You can swap into Liquid and swap back.
But in both situations, you have it's not perfect. There's a timing analysis issue and stuff, right? Like they see it.
Yeah,
maybe that changes as more people use it. But right now, as there's less people using it.
Well, the thing with confidential transactions, you don't see the amounts on the Liquid chain. So you can see that a transaction happens on Liquid and Bitcoin within a Bitcoin block, kind of. But you can't match them because you can see the amount.
Well, that's what I'm saying. As Bolts does more volume, it's probably better, right?
Yeah. And
because if you're the only one doing it in a 10-minute period or something, then it doesn't matter. They see a Liquid transaction going to Bolts wallet, and then you see, because the addresses aren't blinded, only the amounts.
The amounts and the asset type, right? So if someone's, you can't tell if it's USDT or if it's Bitcoin, and you can't tell what the amount is.
Or if it's like Samson's video.
So whatever. One of the shit coins on Liquid. So Liquid is not perfect. The ecosystem is not perfect. There's like, of course, there's like points of failure, which is like, you know, Bolts is one of the two or three swap companies that are doing swaps.
But isn't Bolts open source? Can't you run the swap provider too?
I can definitely run the swap provider.
So is that something you're considering? That's kind of, I was a leading question when I said to you, like, your users would be, like, if Bolts goes down, then I'm stuck in Liquid.
I'm confident there's going to be a bunch of anonymous people running.
Competing, right?
Yeah.
And so
competing.
Do you imagine in the wallet you'll allow
100%.
People to switch provider?
100%. I think the reason why right now we are just using Bolts, so right now there's like one Bolt server by default, which is the Bolts one. There's two reasons. The first one is because I love these guys and they're making money from the swaps, right? And like, Bull Bitcoin doesn't need to make money from swaps.
Yeah. And they've done a lot of proof of work.
Right.
They're like good operators.
Yeah. Like we make money from the exchange. So like, I'm not trying to like milk revenue from the wallet. I make way, way, way more money on the exchange than anything I could do with the wallet. And the other reason is that it's not trivial to run a Bolt server, right? It's like, it's just running a power Lightning node is a full-time job and they're doing a great job. But definitely in the future, kind of like...
And it's kind of the same LSP problem, right? It's a capital constraint problem. It's a little bit easier, but it's...
Oh, yeah. You need liquidity to run like a Bolt server, and you need to be able to move that liquidity automatically quickly. You need scripts. You need like engineers to like manage all that. So it's not trivial, but it's also not like magic, you know?
Right.
It's not... Anybody that's motivated enough and that like is running a power Lightning node, like... could run like a Bolt server. And in the future, of course, what you're going to see is you're going to see a bunch of different Bolt servers and maybe even a Bolt server discovery mechanism. Kind of like, that's one of the things that Wasabi did that I thought was
The coordinator discovered.
And by the way, just so you know, that was a bounty on Nasser that I paid for.
Yeah.
Right? That was my.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah. That was my bounty that actually Cooks ended up implementing in Nasser, which is a coordinator discovery service, where you know when you start up the wallet, if you have people that are running coordinators anonymously over Tor, the problem is like, how do you market your anonymous service without doxing yourself? Right. Well, you can just announce it on Nostr, and your clients can just get all these announcements.
And you have the UX problem, just like which coordinator do I use?
Yeah.
From a user perspective.
Yeah, of course, and that's because the coordinator can lie about whatever they're saying. You know, it's tough, but what we're doing is we are moving on the compromise scale to lower and lower and lower compromise while maintaining the UX.
Lower
right?
trust, but pushing it as far as possible to the UX.
Right.
Side.
Yeah.
Which is a problem we've had in this space. It's either one extreme or the other. It's like either super trusted with good UX or very sovereign cypherpunk and horrible UX. And like, we need a bunch of options in the middle.
Yes. There is some degree of compromise that you have to make, but what our job as so there's two types of cypherpunks, okay? There's the intellectual cypherpunks and there's the like commercializing cypherpunks. And that's why, for example, I love Breeze. I love Arcade. I love Bolt. Is because like we fucking ship products.
Get shit done.
We ship products that people use, and you know we change our products over time. We improve them over time. You want to talk about Arc?
Yeah. So real quick, what did I have there? Bolts. Yeah. Let's talk about Arc because so we're talking about Liquid. We're using Liquid here, and two things have come. Two new projects have started shipping, and I'm right there with you that I, from a product focused point of view, like, fuck hype. There's so much bullshit hype in this space for for the last 10 years. If I focused on every white paper that came out, I would have no time to actually get anything done. So I really only start paying attention to something when it's actually shipping, when it's actually usable, right? And so the two things that have appeared is Arc and Spark. Yesterday we had Arc Day here. How are you thinking about those two things, and then how do you think about those two projects in relationship with Bull and Liquid and going forward and whatnot?
Right. So Arc is the technology that gets me the most excited of anything I've seen in Bitcoin since. I'm going to say probably since Lightning. I mean, there's other stuff that gets me excited, like silent payments and Nostr, for example. Like there's stuff that we've done in Bull Bitcoin, like that got me really excited. Something that, okay, before I get into Arc actually, because once I get into Arc, I'm going to go deep into Arc. But like, nice. There's stuff like silent payments, I think is a phenomenal piece of technology. I think what we're going to do at Bull with silent payments is going to be fucking dope. What's the problem with Paynim? With Sunrai, the problem with Paynim is that they had there's two the BIP.
I was gonna say
I forgot the name of the BIP. The one that they were using was like on chain inefficient, and BIP 47. And then there was a
transaction in and out return. In and out return that set up the pairing between the two. So you had at least one extra transaction.
Yes, and the Paynim server was a centralized server.
The naming, so like you got a code,
yes,
right? You had a one-time use code, which didn't require a server.
Yeah.
But if you were going to pay to like Sleepy Moose or something, that was actually a centralized server that was connecting the code to the... Oh, I remember, just before we move on real quick, on the Bolt side, I think it's important for users to realize that the coolest part about Bolts is you're trusting them with uptime. So if they're down, then you can't make a transaction, but you're not actually trusting them with funds. If the transaction fails, you don't lose any money. They never actually take custody of the funds.
So
it's an on-demand atomic swap, which is really, really cool and very different from like Shapeshift or Sideshift.
Oh,
different instant
100%
I've seen in the past.
Bolt is fucking dope because you have what's called a lockup transaction, which is basically like an atomic swap is something that's like, that does not exist before Bitcoin, right? Yeah. That is a very new financial technology, which is, you know, when you're buying drugs from someone, you know, you hand over the weed and I hand over you the cash. Like, we can't atomically swap the weed from the cash. Someone has to send the money first. Whereas an atomic swap, if one of the payments fails, the entire transaction doesn't fail. Like, both payments need to be successful. So that's great.
Awesome.
Okay, so silent payments. Imagine if
back, yeah.
imagine if we had a decentralized directory for silent payments.
Right.
Well, we have that with LNURL.
Yeah.
It's Nostr.
Right.
Nostr is your directory.
Yep.
So I'm not like I hope nobody does that before me because I want to be the first one to do that. But I did put it up on GitHub. Of course, what you're gonna do, what we're gonna do, is silent payment directory on Nostr.
Right. Like a Nostr enabled open contact book.
What I want to do is I want to have the sexy fucking Cash App UX with Cypherpunk. And part of the sexy fucking Cash App UX is that I send money to @Odell.
Right.
Right. I'm not sending money to like SP1212 or whatever.
And I think specifically, it's probably a combo of silent payments for on chain.
Yeah.
And then Bolt 12 for Lightning.
Yeah. So
and you can even put like a native arc. You can put a native arc address in there.
Of course. The one thing that I don't like about Nostr is that it's too Lightning focused, where people still use on chain. I want to do on chain zaps. Right.
Well, so Alex Gleason, the guy who built Truth Social for
Trump,
and now is working on like AI and Nostr stuff. He released a spec for on-chain zaps, but it's a reused address.
Oh, well,
it's not a silent payment; it's a reused address.
That's the thing. Like, don't. We're past that. You know, we're past the thing with silent payments. Is that it's actually hard to execute. It's really difficult to implement. Right. That's why nobody has done
it. That's why I kind of like his reused address because it's very simple. And also, like, for public zaps, there's no privacy anyway. So it's like not the worst trip privacy trade-off.
You can have.
If you zap my post, it like says Francis zapped 2,000 sats.
Sure,
like that.
But we can have zaps that don't reveal the TXID.
Of course, yeah.
Right,
that's strictly better.
Yeah. That's strictly better. So that's what I want to. I don't want to go back. So I want to try to push it forward, but it's hard, and that's why, for example, I gotta give a shout out to Cake. Cake. Shitcoin wallet, it has Litecoin, it has Monero, it has all sorts of crap in it, but they have shipped silent payments.
No, I have Seth on the show all the time, and I get so much shit for it.
He's great. I love these guys.
But I've historically given them a ton of shit for the Shitcoin stuff. I think it's a distraction. They are kind of stuck in the tech debt world where it's like, they already have nano users and shit,
so it's
hard to get them off the platform.
Yeah.
But on the Bitcoin side, they ship like crazy.
Yeah. So silent payments. The other thing that I don't want to get too deep in that because that's going to be a hard pill to swallow for a lot of people. We did actually do a very advanced Bitcoin wallet backup protocol, which is loosely based on the Photon SDK concept, which came out about 5 years ago.
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick.
Okay.
Because I think cloud backups are actually... Once again, you're pushing the UX sovereignty trade-off balance.
Did you try the encrypted backup in Bolt?
It doesn't work on iOS.
Oh, it doesn't? All right. Okay. You didn't hear that, freaks. We're going to fix that. Okay. So
I've been meaning to give you that feedback.
All right. Okay. So here's the TLDR. We want to make something that's easy to use, but that's secure, and that's very difficult. If you encrypt a Bitcoin wallet backup with a user-generated password, you will get wrecked, right?
Yeah.
So... You think you have a good password, you think your passphrase, you think your BIP39 passphrase is good because it's fucking 12 characters, it's not. It's brute forceable.
Right.
It really is.
So some kind of like an Apple user or anyone who has access to iCloud can just try a bunch of different passwords till one works, has a computer do it, that's what a brute force.
Because if I take the physical possession of your encrypted backup file, there's no rate limiting on the encryption. Like, it's not like the PIN on your phone, where there's rate limiting.
There's a secure element stopping.
Yeah, exactly. If I have the physical backup, I can brute force the shit out of it, and I will. And there has been research of people brute forcing BIP39, and you think the amount of generating compute enough to brute force a password is a trivial thing now, right? It's like,
and users, it's known that users don't make secure passwords.
They most certainly, absolutely do not.
Yeah.
So what we did is basically,
and then you also have the opposite side where then they make it too secure and then they forget it,
dude.
They lose access to it, right? Because you have to remember that most people. I mean, I'm not reminding you. I'm reminding the freaks. Most people lose Bitcoin; they don't get it stolen. So you're always trying to find this balance.
And okay, so all of this is on recoverable.com, okay? I literally have a video explaining all of these. I spent a lot of time, and that's the background that I came from, is from the Bitcoin Embassy, where I dealt with both the really high IQ and the low IQ users. So I think I know the Bitcoiner, and I know like the Bitcoin person really well. And of course, that's the big problem. It's if your passphrase is secure enough, you're going to lose it. And if it's insecure, you're going to get it brute force. So how do you fix that? Well, what we did is, and I didn't invent that, but I think we did it way better. It's basically, we derive a very large encryption key from the Bitcoin wallet private key itself using BIPD5, right? So you start with a mnemonic and we derive
a child key,
essentially another mnemonic from your mnemonic, right? It's just random entropy. And we encrypt the mnemonic with the key that we derived from the mnemonic.
Right.
Okay. So you can upload your encrypted mnemonic to the cloud, because that to brute force that encrypted file is the same energy required to guess your private key.
Right.
So, but of course the problem is, all right, so now your encryption key is another mnemonic. What do you do with that?
Okay, so I lost my phone.
Right.
How am I restoring?
Okay, so that encryption key that allows you, well, first of all, to restore your backup file, you just go in your drive, in your Google Drive, and like you download it, it's fine, right? But how do you decrypt it? Well, we created something, it's called a key server. It's called the recoverable server. And think of that as being like a password manager. It's fully anonymous. There's no accounts, there's no email, there's no phone number. It works only on Tor. And when you are doing a backup, you give the encryption key to the key server and you authenticate yourself with like a very easy password, right?
So the user is still picking a password, but it's an easier password because it's not...
The password can be a 6-digit PIN.
Okay.
Right? Because the recoverable server enforces...
So in practice, the user basically is just pressing cloud backup and then they're just remembering a 6-digit PIN.
Yes.
They lose their phone. They reload the app on the new phone, they put in their 6-digit PIN, and your wallet's there.
It's minimum 6-digit PIN, and we prevent the most retarded 6-digit, like you can't,
one.
You can't do that. Like we have the 1,000 most common PINs, and you can't use the 1,000 most common PINs, but anything other than 123456, 111111, 888888, like you can do that. So the key server, and like the way I'm not going to go too deep into the details, but the way that we've implemented it is really good. It's fully anonymous. There's no way that the key server knows who you are. There's no option to connect to it other than Tor. If Tor doesn't work, then you can't use the recoverable server.
And the key here is, if we're going to actually talk about trade-off model, you could technically, work with Apple and steal the backup, right?
So technically,
recoverable and Apple are recoverable and Google aren't working together, which is a strictly better than just trusting Apple or just trusting Google. Right?
If I was somehow able to convince Larry Page to give me access to all the Google Drive,
or vice versa.
The thing is, Google doesn't know which recoverable server is being used or if a recoverable server is being used, because you don't have to use the recoverable server. You can export that private key and just do a regular backup without using the server.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, I think this is a great trade-off.
Yeah,
it's not cold storage, but it's not supposed to solve cold storage.
It's and the first thing on the website is like, this is not cold storage, right?
You do the framing really well. And I think, look at the opposite, not the opposite, but another trade-off balance here is what Phoenix does. Where on Phoenix, they have like a quick and easy upload to iCloud button.
Yeah.
And what they say is like, they make you check a box that's like, the NSA and Apple can steal your money. Are you cool with it?
Yeah.
And also, that threat model is probably good for the majority of people. Like, I think most people don't have Apple and the NSA in their threat model. And this is significantly better than that.
And you know, I wanted to do something that's also a little bit better than Envoy's, like, Magic Backup. But they had the right idea. They had, like, the right UX. I just think ours is, like, a little bit more, like, considerably more secure. And the thing is, like, what people actually, and you have to think about, like, okay, what do people actually do, right? And the same thing with Liquid. It's like, what do people actually use? Well, they use Wallet of Satoshi.
Yeah.
And what do they do with the backup? They fucking put the entire mnemonic. Dude, people put their mnemonic in LastPass.
Or like Apple Notes is even worse.
They put it in Apple Notes. They put it in Google Drive. What they do is they put the mnemonic on a piece of paper and they leave it in their office. What they do is they scribble it on a fucking post-it and they lose the post-it. Like, that's what they actually do, right? People don't get hacked.
Take a screenshot, keep it in their photos or whatever.
And like what they do is they leave it on Coinbase. That's what they do, right? With a password. All right, so let's talk about ARK. All right, so why am I fucking
Just real quick.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
And last but not least, if none of that suits you, you can just write down a classic seed phrase.
Yeah, of course.
Store it securely and do that as your bull Bitcoin backup. If you lose your phone, you just put in your mnemonic, boom, done.
You got it. And that's why, thanks for the issue, actually. Like, I wanted the turn off the exchange, right? Yeah. So if you don't want to use the exchange, actually someone actually did a PR.
Yeah,
it wasn't us.
Really quick, it was like in a day or something.
It was a random person from the internet that did the PR.
I zapped him for it.
Yeah, sweet. So I want, you know, I actually do use Recoverable for my hot wallets because, I don't know, I got like $800 on it and it's so convenient. And I uninstall wallets all the time, so it's like super convenient.
I like cloud backups.
But you know, the thing is, I'm obviously not going to fucking put my stash on cloud backup because my stash is, you know, I don't know where it is. Yeah. I don't have a stash, just so I lost all my Bitcoins. Except the ones in my Recoverable backup, the $600. That's all the Bitcoins I have. But yeah, of course, so you can see the general theme here. The general theme is like, I want to make shit that's easy for my mom. My mom's a Bitcoiner, actually. She's fucking awesome. I want to make something that's easy for my mom, but also that I can use. And I know it sounds cliche, but man, you would be shocked at the amount of people that told me, like, you cannot do that. Even, I remember, like, I got feedback from like the Bitcoin design guy, the people or design club, and they're like, you know, you're trying too hard to like, you're trying too hard to cater to both the cypherpunks or the normies. Like you have to pick one, you know, like you have to just either, you have to be Sparrow or you have to be Aqua.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I don't want to be either Sparrow or Aqua. I want to be both.
There's a happy middle.
Right. Yeah. There is a happy middle and it's called advanced options, you know, and it's like you pick a default path. If you don't know what you're doing, you click the buttons, next, next, next. And if you know what you're doing, then you click the advanced option. And then you go into the advanced settings, you know. And right, so...
I derailed it. Let's talk about ARC.
Okay, so ARC is a completely different set of trade-offs than Liquid or any kind of custodial or semi-custodial or trust-minimized model. Because ARC has this very specific feature where you have unilateral exit from ARC. So ARC is a concept where the ARC server virtualizes UTXOs into virtual UTXOs. So it's like converting your Bitcoin into virtual Bitcoin, which only exists in an ARC ecosystem. So not unlike, you know, Cashew or Liquid or that kind of stuff. It's you have a token of a virtual UTXO, which is worth one-to-one, it's worth a Bitcoin UTXO. But what ARC does is that there is a pre-signed transaction which allows you to claim the Bitcoins on-chain, non-cooperatively with the server in case the server goes down.
You can exit whenever you want with that permission.
Yes, you can exit whenever you want. And like the server can't rug you if you exit and if they get, you know, arrested or seized.
And what's the trade-off is that it costs a lot of non-chain fees?
Yeah, so the trade-off is that let's say that you have $5 on ARC and you do a unilateral exit, like you're gonna get rugged.
Yeah.
And there's another kind of like weird trade-off in ARC where ARC has a pre-confirmed transaction model, which is like you can have in order to get the on-chain guarantee on ARC, you need to include your virtual UTXO in an actual MuSig Taproot output on chain.
No.
And that's not free, right? The ARC ASP needs to publish a Bitcoin transaction in order to update, I guess, the state.
How often are they doing this?
Man, Alex is going to kill me if I explain ARC wrong, but they will do that whenever they want.
I'll have Alex on at some point.
You know, I'm assuming something like, my assumption
like
is
like once a day or something,
like a couple times a day or something like that, right? But you don't have to have on-chain guarantee because if you can choose to not have the on-chain guarantee, and in that case, the ARC server, if it colludes with the sender, can double spend you, right? So if you have the on-chain guarantee, you can't be rugged. If you don't have the on-chain guarantee, you trust that the ARC server is not colluding.
It's not malicious. They have to be actively malicious.
It's like a zero-conf transaction.
Yeah.
But the thing with a zero-conf, but the ASP needs to like actively collude against you, right? So for anything that's like, all right, so let's say I'm a merchant and I'm getting paid like, I don't know, $150 for a dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Is the ARC organization going to double spend me?
Are they colluding with the person buying dinner? Right.
Yes. I mean, again, like, no, you know, there's the
probability of that happening is very low.
So do I really need that $150 to be on-chain claimable in a Taproot MuSig output? Like, no. But, you know, if I'm a large organization or if I'm a large merchant, that's fine. Like, and, you know, I'm getting to the point where I might also be afraid that the art server goes down, you know?
Like, well, so, but that's right.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. So that's why, like, there's a balancing act there where you do it once a day or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like, okay, there's a settlement, right? Yeah. Like, once a day, it kind of settles and then it can't happen.
Like, as the end user, I'm going to pay for the settlement, right? So the ARC, I mean, I don't know what the pricing model, but you can imagine that if ARC is paying the on-chain fees, they're eventually going to pass that on to their end user. They're not going to...
Right. It gets expensive, especially if fees go up. If we're actually bullish on Bitcoin, fees should probably go up. About that. But.
And there's another problem with ARC, which is that the ARC server needs to lock up liquidity to kind of like front the ARC network. So your virtual UTXO will expire. It actually expires. And like right now, I think it's like 50 days or something, or like 60 days or something. So you need to refresh your VUTXO, and there is a liveness requirement to that. And that's why people say that you need confidence to make ARC better,
right.
Because
it makes it cheaper. Right.
Well, okay, and I'm going above my pay grade here, because you know I'm not a Bitcoin script guy, but my understanding is that confidence would allow people to refresh their VUTXOs without a liveness requirement, like without your wallet being online.
Right.
But the thing is that we can solve these problems with software that's not protocol changes, right?
So for example, the problem is like getting CTV as a soft fork, while it might be ideal for ARC, it seems very unlikely that we're going
to have to assume that it's not going to happen.
The sane way to be a Bitcoiner is to assume no soft forks will ever happen.
Always. Yes, exactly. If you base your business model on a soft fork, you're going to get wrecked. So the same thing happened with Lightning, right? So what happens if your node is offline when there is a...
But Lightning, we got the software.
We did get the software for Lightning, but we still have to have a watchtower, right?
Yeah.
So if your Lightning node goes offline and there is what's it called? Anyway, there's an exit transaction.
Yeah.
Like your node...
penalty transaction.
Yeah, like your node needs to wake up, right? And that's
otherwise your counterparty can take all your money.
Yes, so that's why we have the concept of watchtower. So like one of the reasons why I am here specifically right now...
But it's also like you have to be offline for like 2 weeks or something.
Right? Yeah. But I mean...
In practice, most people aren't using watchtowers and we rarely ever see that attack happen.
That's right, but it's the same thing for ARC. Like if you're online, then you can refresh, but if you're not online when your VUTXO expires, like there is a liveness requirement. So you know, stuff that we are going to work on is a kind of like a watchtower model, but a delegate refresh model, right? Where maybe the wallet operator, like Bol, we can run a delegate server so that the user conceptually the user is telling us like, hey, like these are my VUTXOs. This is when they expire. Like refresh them for me when it's time to refresh for me.
Without ever taking custody or anything.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like a service to help. So that's, there's like some of these trade-offs that are somewhat fixed or mitigated by a soft fork. We're going to try our very best to fix them with
I mean, it sounds like they're workable without.
It's workable without. And like so Liquid, it's kind of like, in Liquid, you can't really be double spent. It's like there's like more finality, but there's no exit transaction, right?
Which is really bad that there's no exit transaction.
Of course it's bad. And that's the
beauty of Lightning. Like Lightning has a bunch of trade-offs that make it kind of shitty UX-wise, self-custody-wise. But at the end of the day, I can always escape off-chain, on-chain myself without any permission required.
Lightning is a miracle. It's amazing, right? It's amazing. And then... So there is another one called Spark, and I'm going to be honest, I didn't look into Spark because of the vibes.
Yeah.
It's purely vibes. It's purely aesthetics.
It's very compliance bro vibes.
Yeah, it's purely aesthetics, and also like Spark and Arcade. So Arc is the name of the protocol. Arcade is the one implementation that you know, people who are familiar with Alex B and Tiero and Cooks, you know, these are
legends in their own right.
Fucking my favorites. One of the reasons why I'm so into ARC is because there's people I respect in this space. There's Roy from Breeze.
Yeah.
There's Tiero, which I knew from the Liquid days.
Yeah.
And there's Cooks, right?
Yeah.
And there's Bolts.
Yeah.
And
Freaks. Just Cooks like has a very low profile, but he's most well known for BTC Pay Server. He was heavily involved in BTC Pay Server, and he's actually one of the co-creators of Noster. alongside Fiat Jeff.
And what these guys have in common is they ship.
Yeah.
They fucking deliver. Like, Tierro delivers, Cooks delivers, Roy delivers, Bolts delivers. And coincidentally, we were all at Arcade Day, very excited about ARC, right?
Yes,
so there is a let's fucking ship mentality with ARC. To be fair, Spark also did ship.
They've been, a lot of people have underestimated, they've shipped like crazy.
Yeah, and Spark is shipping in a kind of like corporate way where they are like going after exchanges and like
it's more polished too. It's easier to build on right now.
Spark bought a payment processor in order to get inside like the kind of like fintech payment space.
Well, it helps when you get $165 million with A16Z seed investment.
That doesn't hurt to be perfectly honest. However, I don't want to say anything negative about Spark. It's just you know.
Well, I'll go out there. Like, the biggest negative right now is on the privacy side. Yeah. They basically modeled Spark off of Mercury Layer, which is a state chain implementation, and then they stripped the privacy stuff out, and then they made it even less private. So, like, right now, as it currently stands, you can kind of think it like of it like the Tron trust model, which, ironically, a lot of people use Tron. More people use Tron, quote-unquote, self-custody than Bitcoin. But it's just a single reusable address. So if you have someone's Spark address, if you pay them once on Lightning and you have their Spark address, you can see every transaction they've ever made, including their current balance.
Yeah.
But on the alternate side, it's really easy to build on.
Yeah. For sure. And one of the things that ARC, I think, we will have to work on is the privacy as well, because of course the ASP, you can think of ARC as like a private mempool, which is the ASP's private mempool. So obviously the ASP can see all of the VETXOs. You as a user, you can't see like the mempool. It's ARC's private mempool. Presumably they can make it public. So it's not, I don't think it's an improvement necessarily of privacy over Bitcoin in the same way that like Liquid has a privacy improvement over Bitcoin, even though Liquid also has a UTXO.
I call it like, it's not a perfect analogy, but I call it like a custodial privacy model. You're trusting a third party with your privacy.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, people already trust Electrum servers, like random Electrum servers on the internet. So, but you know, the thing about ARC transaction is that they're essentially free inside the ARC network.
Yeah.
If they're free, I don't know, maybe we can do CoinJoins and ARC. I don't know. Like, it's still early. I'm confident that the guys involved in ARC and Arcade specifically are people that have worked on privacy technologies. I think we're going to be able to solve that. So, like the thing about ARC is that it has different trade-offs, but it has some really really neat features. So, is it going to replace Liquid?
Yeah, that's my next question. Is there a future where Liquid gets removed from the Bull Wallet and ARC gets replaced with it?
There's 100% a future. There's 100% a future where the Instant Payments Wallet, which is like the default one that the user that doesn't know what he's doing, is the one that he's receiving funds into.
Yeah.
There is a future where that's an ARC wallet.
Okay.
And that future might be close, might be far.
Do you think the middle future is like you have both in there, or is there going to be a world? Because that gets confusing too.
I mean, so there's
did
like.
Did I see a screenshot that you posted online that was like Bull using ARC?
Yeah. So
what's going on there? Is that just testing? Or?
I mean, it's testing on mainnet with real money. So it is. I have ARC on the mainnet right now. So of course there are things that. When you say like sleep at night, like what makes me sleep at night, right? I'm not comfortable with like onboarding you to ARC right now. I would feel bad because the UTXO expiry stuff is not really solved. There's no UX around the unilateral exit. There's no UX around delegation, delegated refresh of the VTXO. So there's like stuff that's missing. Whereas on Liquid, I mean, it's pretty polished. I mean, Liquid exists for like 10 years. So it's like, you know, give it some time. But I think that future is like a lot closer than we think. And like, okay, so there's like a wallet. It's called Layers, right? And Layers is kind of like, we have all the layer twos and like you can choose your layer two. Like, but it's like, man, there's like this like info thing in the wallet where I like explain the Liquid security. Imagine me explain like, choose your network. Like,
no,
here's the trade-off.
You've already lost the user when you're doing that.
I have to make that choice for them.
I
have to choose the default.
Too, like, I love them, but like, if a user needs to watch a 2-hour BTC sessions video, like we've already lost the plot.
Yeah, of course.
They should never have to do that. It should be very simple.
So Boulder Coin is going to have to decide whether the default is Arc or Liquid or Spark or State Chain or Mercury or whatever it is. And I'm going to make that decision based on what I think is right. And I think right now, of course, Liquid is the obvious choice. It's Liquid is the now, Arc is the future.
Yeah.
And Arc also has other kind of like DeFi implications to it, which get people really excited. Not me really. Like I'm more of a dum dum. Like I just want to pay for my fruits with Bitcoin.
I don't need a fucking sushi swap exchange.
Yeah, right. So yeah, I want people to pay with Bitcoin and earn Bitcoin. That's what I want.
And then I guess like the one thing that might be valuable, quote unquote, in the DeFi place is like lending stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But then the question to me is always like, at the end of the day, like if I take a loan out on my Bitcoin, first of all, you should be very careful with it because that's how people get wrecked. But then second of all, like I need dollars in my bank account. Yes. So there's going to be centralized elements regardless.
Well,
so why are we pretending, why are we doing this huge Rube Goldberg machine when you have Tether in there, so you're trusting Tether, and then you have your bank account in there somewhere, so you're trusting your bank account.
I'm not going to go too much into the details, but you can have very trustless, almost trustless stable coins on Arc. You can have we can make.
But is it, what is that like? Is it like DAI or something? Like it's like Bitcoin collateralized algorithmic stablecoin.
Kind of. It's like,
those have a tendency to blow up too, right?
So think of the fact that on Arc you have the unilateral exit from the Arc VUTXO. You can have a unilateral exit on Bitcoin from a stablecoin. Right. That's something that Arc makes possible.
That's cool.
It is cool, and it's probably the only thing about Arc that's not Bitcoin that interests me. The other thing that we can do on Arc is like these kind of like trustless swaps between if you're trading Bitcoin for stablecoins right now, there's a centralized counterparty. But kind of like the Bolt model where you can have an atomic swap, you can have an atomic swap between a Bitcoin and a stable coin.
Okay, that's interesting.
On Arc. But really, this is like, it's like icing on the cake. It's DeFi stuff. I'm not interested in it personally.
You like the payments use case.
I like the payments use case. And I think Arc is the only thing that has come up other than Spark, which is like a fully new model, right? Like, because Cashew, Fedi, Liquid, it's the same kind of thing, right? It's like you have a custodian or you have an entity which is guaranteeing a peg, whatever. It's like Cashew, Fedi, Mint, and Liquid are like different shades of the same thing, whereas Arc is a completely new thing.
I think a good comparison is like Lightning. It's like fundamentally a fundamentally innovative new way for Bitcoin payment.
Absolutely. And like as a fanboy of, you know, like we integrated Lightning in 2019,
right?
But we launched it on mainnet in 2022. It took us 3 years to do that just because it wasn't ready. But like I was like first to jump on Lightning, first to jump on Liquid, and like just out of ego, I want to be the first one to run on Arc. So Arc actually does work in the Bull wallet. Like you can send from like the Bull wallet if you have access to the super user mode, and I don't think I'm gonna give it to the friends. I'm a little scared. There is a super user mode. If you know, ask me nicely, I'll give you the codes. You have to tap certain things in the wallet and then access the Arc wallet. But it is reckless. It's reckless right now. So it really is. So like do that with like pocket money. So it does work, and like we have the best engineers ever, and like really excited to, and of course, like not only do I want Arc in the wallet, I want Arc in the exchange. Same thing with PayJoin. PayJoin is in the wallet right now. It's not in the exchange, and it's not for legal reasons at all. It's literally just because what we were talking about earlier, like PayJoin V2 was like reckless, and it just kind of breaks. So it's fine if it's, you know, you and me testing a PayJoin at a conference, but like if someone's buying like 100 grand worth of Bitcoin, I don't want the PayJoin to fail, of course.
But still, I don't think money would be lost. There's no risk of money.
No, money wouldn't be lost. It was just kind of like
failed transaction.
Yeah, the PayJoin would like get stuck, and then there would be a fallback transaction. It would just, you know, kind of like piss people off, really. But yeah, I do want to have Arc. I want to play with Arc in the Bull Bitcoin exchange, and like make that, like, I want Bull Bitcoin to be always like the most technologically advanced exchange at the forefront. And like, our goal really has always been like, just looking like be the model. Like, I want to be I want to be the model that like people emulate.
Okay, I got a couple more topics real quick. Just real quick, back to Liquid. It feels like Liquid could do a little bit more on the privacy side. You've been very involved, like in Liquid network management and whatnot. Is there any interesting updates happening there on that side, or is it kind of stagnant and it is what it is, and we have confidential transactions and we should just be
happy
with what we have?
At the protocol level, I don't think there's much more that can be done, but there's,
or not even the protocol level. Like,
I mean, there's nothing
like
stopping.
A lobby-sobby about it,
yeah, of course, of course. There's nothing stopping anyone right now from doing CoinJoins and Liquid.
Well, there's no app. No one wants to do it, right?
I mean, I think no one wants it because Liquid has a really funny thing, which is that chain analysis doesn't work on Liquid because chain analysis uses. I mean, it could, but one of the main heuristics of chain analysis is change detection.
Yeah, and specifically like round amounts.
Yeah,
and if you don't see, because the freaks know this, but the way chain analysis works and chain surveillance works is it's all probability analysis,
yeah.
And they're trying to figure out when ownership changes.
Yes.
So when you don't have the amounts, it makes it much more difficult.
It makes it really, really, really hard.
But if you're like sending max amounts, then you can still, there's no change. It becomes a little bit obvious, stuff like that.
There's no, you're right. Yeah. So if you're doing max amounts, and also there's a neat thing. It's like, there are a lot of pay joins on Liquid.
Yeah.
There's a tons of pay joins.
Yeah. So pay join does do even better improvement on Liquid than it does on chain because the amounts are blinded.
And the reason why there's so many pay joins on Liquid is that all the USDT to Bitcoin swaps happening on Liquid are using a like somewhat non-custodial model called Siteswap, and every swap is a pay join on Liquid, right? So a lot of transactions on Liquid are actually pay joins. So the common input ownership heuristic, which is the core of chain analysis.
Do you think Bolts will do that as well? Do pay joins by default? Because maybe that's all we need. Maybe that makes a huge upgrade.
That's up to Bolts.
Okay.
It's up to Bolts. What I will say, is that with the advent of PayJoin 1.0.0, many things become more possible than were before. Like PayJoin was definitely a little reckless. And then there's also PayJoin V3, which is the next iteration of PayJoin, which is multi-party PayJoins, which is effectively a coin join in a way.
And we could drop in that onto Liquid too, right?
Yeah, of course.
That's one of the cool parts about Liquid is it's very similar to Bitcoin.
It's like a fork of Bitcoin where you can just play around with it, and since it's centralized, we can update it without too many worries. But the thing about PayJoin that really, so I have a specific, personal and very visceral hatred of chain analysis, of some chain analysis companies. It's a long story. I'll share one day. I really dislike chain analysis, and one of the motivations for me to make PayJoin a reality is that I actually believe that the chain analysis companies are bullshitters. They're phonies. They're fake. They're voodoo.
They do a lot of bad things, but that's the worst part.
Right. They're astrologers, and what they end up doing is they do a lot of false positive, where Bitcoiners who are innocent have evidence against them on chain that they did something wrong, where they didn't do anything wrong. And
right. it's probability analysis, right. And like when it's 60% probability, the chain analyst firms, they like pretend it's 100%. Right? They pretend it's definitive.
They say it's 60% probable, right? But that number is fucking pulled out of their buttholes completely.
It's really
right?
Like 10%.
Right. And it's like you either did it or didn't do it, right?
Yeah.
It's like crime is blatant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're not 60% guilty. But the problem is the justice system is taking chain analysis's word for it because it has, partly because based on the common ownership, common input ownership heuristic. So if we destroy that heuristic, then is any chain analysis evidence ever admissible in court after that? Because if the if chain analysis says...
I think there's an argument it shouldn't be admissible already.
Right,
But even more so.
Right, because chain analysis is going to say, like, we have some solid reasoning behind our report, And I can be like, well, your solid reasoning is based on this heuristic, which is no longer correct. So all of your fucking analysis falls apart. So PageJoin is really cool in that regards. Also, a really neat thing about PageJoin is that it allows for, anyway, I'm such a fan of PageJoin, it's so great. It allows for passive consolidation of Bitcoin. So when you consolidate, when you have a lot of small UTXOs in your wallet, that's not a good thing, because in the future, if the fees go up, you will be paying transaction fees for every little UTXO you have in your wallet. So you want to consolidate, right? But people don't know that they should consolidate, and they don't know how to consolidate.
Less UTXOs are better fee-wise, but worse privacy-wise.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's why, by the way, with the auto-swap, like, I think that a million sat UTXO is like the right trade-off between privacy and, and I think the million sat UTXO is like, it's like, should be the default right now. But if you are receiving,
you push it, but I like it.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds nice.
100,000 sats will probably always be economically spendable.
Yeah,
like at least the next 10 years.
Yeah, that's true. But like a million UTXOs is $1,000. Like if the coffee shop owner knows that you have $1,000, like everybody has $1,000. You know what I mean?
I agree. Yeah. It's a good trade-off.
So if you have UTXOs in your wallet, the way that you would consolidate is by spending those UTXOs to yourself.
Yeah,
but
send all to myself.
Yes, but if you have PageJoin in your wallet and I am sending you Bitcoins, you are consolidating passively without realizing it as a receiver.
Yeah.
Which is fucking awesome.
Because as a receiver, I'm contributing an input.
Yeah.
And then you're contributing an input.
Yeah.
And then I get one bigger input afterwards.
Yes. Yes. So that's dope. Love PageJoin.
I guess you contribute two inputs. I contribute two inputs. I contribute one input, right? And then we're good.
We can program PageJoin to do whatever we want. Like the Bull Bitcoin wallet could have consolidation mode, right? Where you know what I mean? Like okay, let's say you have 10 inputs. You have 10 UTXOs, but you only need to contribute two. You can choose to contribute all of them in that PageJoin, right? And we can have the consolidation mode as a also based on the network fees at the time. You can say, hey, if the fees are less than this amount.
Well, that's what I think would be particularly helpful on the Liquid side, because fees are so fucking cheap.
Yeah.
It's like 33 cents or something.
Yeah. And if you're consolidating Bitcoin, maybe, you know, you can consolidate it inside a swap, right? So you have tons of small UTXOs you want to consolidate. You're not going to gain backwards privacy because those, once the coins are consolidated on chain, like we can all see that they're linked to the same person.
Yeah.
Unless it's a PageJoin. Unless it's a PageJoin. But if you consolidate into a swap, you know, you consolidate into Liquid and then you swap it back to Bitcoin, like that new Bitcoin that you got is completely unlinked. It's very unlinked, let's say, to the original Bitcoin that you got. So CoinJoin is not the only game in town.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I agree. And especially with confidential transactions, I think it could be, there's a lot of cool things you can do on the Liquid side without protocol change.
Yeah.
That my mind is really racing now that there's actually a very usable Liquid wallet. Because that was one of the main things stopping Liquid usability was there was just no good user-facing stuff. And now we have...
It's a network effect, man. And the thing is, like, it's kind of exponential because what happened is Bolt, Breeze, Bull, and to some degree also the Aqua team and some other teams kind of like all gravitated towards the same conclusion at the same time, which was around the time, by the way, of Bitcoin Atlantis, the conference in Madeira, where we all kind of like got together and we were like, a lot of the builders were like, this is what we're going to do. This is the model that, so there's like the network effect of Liquid is growing. But the network effect of Arcade is also growing really quick, man. You'll have a look at that. There's at least six Bitcoin companies right now that are building on Arc.
And I think the fact that a lot of wallets, including yourself, are using Lightning as like kind of the interoperable layer.
It is.
Means that you don't have to fight the network effect as much because you can drop in Arc where Liquid is, and at the end of the day, they're still paying and receiving from Lightning. Right.
So now, that's,
I have a question for you. The biggest trade-off with using a Liquid-enabled Lightning wallet is small, we haven't really talked about it, is small transactions, because you do have to make that you have to make the liquid transaction. So like sending, like, I think a lot of wallets, maybe yours even included, like you can't receive a payment under 1,000 sats, which, you know, people for whatever reason love sending like 40 sat payments. So you have that. But the second piece is you don't have Lightning address support. How do you think about that? Like
we will.
Support.
We will. I'm gonna make it happen.
I'm just gonna ship it.
I'm gonna fucking ship it.
Is there a concern that, like, how does that work? Are you gonna be running basically a server that is like holding Liquid addresses or something? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, it's gonna be a directory server, right? So, and that is not as trustless. There's more trust assumption involved there. But what we can do as like a company is we can run a Lightning server and basically. You give us like a Liquid, I guess an
Liquid addresses.
Either an XPub or one address. It's probably better if it's just one address. I think address reuse is probably better than XPub leak, to be perfectly honest. So
couldn't I was thinking like every time I open the wallet,
you can
like send I can address. Or send you like 100 addresses.
Yeah, that's
or
right. Something. Yeah, yeah. We can lock 100 addresses. Yeah. But basically what would happen is like I would create a swap between the sender and your address as the receiver, and we would be hosting like
a, give it to bulks.
Yeah, exactly. And instead of creating a Lightning network invoice with my node as the server operator, I get I create a swap with the bulk server. It's not as fully trustless as a proper bulk swap. There's like a tiny amount of time in between that swap where a rug can technically happen, not fully.
You could probably man in the middle. You could give a Liquid address that you control instead of I control.
Yeah, there's like
I think is fine.
I need to get a little deeper into that.
I just want people to be able to pay me at odell@bullbitcoin.com. You know, like it's just a convenience thing. And if I need more security, then I'll give them an actual invoice.
Well, the thing on Liquid is like we actually dropped the fees on Liquid. We can just do things on the centralized network, which is great. So the fees on Liquid is 0.01 sat per V-byte. And
it's like 33 sats a transaction.
For a confidential transaction, which is like 20 times bigger than a regular transaction, I think we're talking about 3,000 V-bytes, therefore, yes, 33 sats. For a regular transaction, it's zero, right? Yeah. So a regular transaction on Liquid that's not confidential is basically free. Yeah. And the reason why we don't do swaps under 1,000 sats is because a swap transaction involves two on-chain transactions and two on-chain confidential transactions. So like a Bull Bitcoin swap using Bolts, which we could like not use confidential transactions if you wanted to, but I think it's worth it.
To pay. That
will be 6,000 bytes, therefore 66 sats, right? 66 sats around that, which is like, I don't know, man. Like we could, if it's like 6% of 1,000 sat transactions. So it's like not great, but there's nothing stopping us from doing, for example, silent payments on Liquid. We could do that.
Yeah.
We could do a bunch of things, right? We can just do that if we want to. Definitely, like at least on chain, I want to have the on chain apps with because the UX that we want is like I pay at Odell, and then at Odell is a Nostr handle. So my Bull Bitcoin wallet, which I very obviously we're gonna have Nostr in the Bull Bitcoin wallet for many reasons. First of all, I want to have private group chats in Bull Bitcoin because. When you are paying someone, you are also talking with that person.
Right.
Because let's say I want to pay you, you're going to be like, send me an address. Right?
It's a human condition. It's like, right. What? It's like 80% of P2P trades are happening on like WhatsApp or something.
Yeah, of course.
People just want to chat.
Yeah, of course. So you want that to be confidential. There's also cool things. Obviously, the next frontier is multisig, right? So I've never been a individual multisig fan, like multisig yourself. Never been a fan, but I think now with the technologies that are arriving with Miniscript, now is the time to like have a refresh at the multisig experience. And what I really want to do is something that I use personally. My greatest shame is that I use the BitPay wallet.
Copay, right?
It used to be called Copay, now it's just called BitPay for multisig. Because
the original multisig wallet.
The original multisig wallet, because Bull Bitcoin, we have some of our budget is in Bitcoin, right? Yeah. So. You know, like when Madex does these crazy like stunts, you know, that for Bull Bitcoin, you know, We have a budget. We call it that. We can just do things budget, and it's a multi-sig wallet. And in order to make sure that nobody does anything too retarded with that budget, we have a multi-sig.
And why don't you use Sparrow for that? Because you want mobile.
It's because we spend a lot of we do it all the time, right?
So you want the convenience of mobile.
Yeah, exactly. I get like a notification on BitPay app, which is like Madex wants to spend this amount of money to, I don't know, rent a tank.
Oh, and it just gives you an in-app notification.
Yeah, with a message with like literally. Like,
press like approve.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Francis, I want $5,000. I'm gonna rent a tank
for
a video shoot or something. And I'm like, approve or deny. So I want that over white noise.
Yeah,
I want that over Nostr.
100%.
Right. Yeah. I want to do other things in Nostr. I want
white noise will be perfect for that.
I want
it's still early, but it'll be
like perfect. I want to be able to communicate with the bull users.
Yeah.
I can't right now. As the Bull Bitcoin operator, because
like
of the privacy.
Send them a push notification, basically. Push notification.
Well, basically, what I can do is I can create a Nostr as a very small... I don't want to compete with social media stuff. I want to use Nostr as a back-end...
Yeah.
It's just like as a back-end communications network for contacts and for stuff like that. But there's nothing stopping you or us, which obviously we will do, to generate a Nostr key pair, and you're connected to, you're automatically following Bull Bitcoin, yeah. Or you're automatically connected to my relay or something like that. And I'm saying like, guys, we have an update or something like that.
Right.
And you, I'm not pushing anything to you. You are following me on Nostr automatically.
And you're opening the app and you're going to check your
address. And in the app, we can just say like, hey, any message that's coming from this NPub,
display it on the
homepage, right? Because this NPub is the like emergency Bull Bitcoin NPub, there's a bug, you need to update, stop transaction, whatever it is, or aliens have arrived, whatever it is.
It's important. It's important to be able to communicate with your users in a secure way.
Yeah, so not Nostr, Arc, silent payments, all that kind of shit.
I love it.
Okay,
I don't want to kept you too long already, and you have some obligations, but you're not allowed to leave without... What's your opinion on Core 30's upper turn?
I have the only correct opinion, by the way. So
I've noticed that about most of your opinions is how you feel about them.
It's so nuanced. In order to be correct, you need to have a lot of nuance. I don't want to burst anybody's bubble, but running knots will not. There's a certain fatalistic aspect to my opinion, which is there's nothing we can do really to prevent spam. And that was proven by, kind of like the Joker of Bitcoin, like Peter Todd, who like created Libra Relay and is like, haha, like... I'll relay all the things. And then before that, there was a kind of gentleman's agreement in Bitcoin that, we have two mechanisms. We have the policy one and we have the consensus one. And the policy one, you can call it a gentleman's agreement. And if someone decides to not be a gentleman, you can't force the agreement on them.
Right.
Whereas the consensus layer, of course...
Is the hard rules.
The hard rules, of course. I have mixed feelings about Bitcoin Core, and I kind of feel it's kind of weird because I've been in the early camp of there's some things about Bitcoin Core, the process, because there's something about the Bitcoin Core process and of the Bitcoin Core inner circle that I don't like.
Yeah.
There's definitely like a clique, a little cliquey
100%, yeah.
aspect to it. And, not everybody's PRs get merged, and it helps to be friends.
Yeah.
If you want to get things shipped in Bitcoin Core and you're part of the inner circle, you kind of like get, you're not automatically whitelisted, but your stuff. So there's
fast tracked.
Yeah, you're fast tracked. There's like things that I don't like, specifically about Bitcoin Core 30, by the way, which really sucks, is they removed, that was the thing that pissed me off the most, really niche thing. They removed support for legacy wallets.
Yeah.
They removed support for importing Bitcoin addresses and private keys into a Bitcoin Core wallet, which means that we will not be updating to Bitcoin Core 30 because part of CipherNode, like our open source Bitcoin backend, relies on that to work, relies on legacy wallets. So that kind of sucks. But Bitcoin's fine.
What was their argument for that?
I'm assuming it's because
code cleanup or something.
Yeah, I'm assuming is that they don't want to work. They don't want to maintain it. It's fine. Like, I don't need intermediate. I can run, you know, 29.2 forever.
Yeah.
29.2 introduces the 0.1 sats per, or the a lower side byte limit.
You like that change.
Okay. I fucking love it, man. I fucking love it. Like, if the miners, if there's, you know, I don't want to have an artificial price floor for, that's communism. You know, that's what we have in Canada with the price of fucking maple syrup. You know what I mean? There's an artificial price floor on it or something like that. So I'm happy that the fees are getting low. But the thing is, like, if I had never heard of the Bitcoin Core op return debate, it would still have not affected my life, right? And of course, like, I don't like spam. Of course, I don't want it to be on Bitcoin. I don't like shitcoins. I don't want. Some people want the shitcoins to be on Bitcoin. Like, they specifically want that. Like, I don't want that at all.
Same.
I'm a monetary Bitcoiner. You know, I think the Bitcoin blockchain is not a general purpose database. It's a monetary transaction database. So that's what I want it to be.
It's money.
It is money. But unfortunately, it's not up to me to decide what it is. It's up to the consensus to decide. And short of a soft fork or a hard fork, even maybe. There's nothing we can do. And
is there even really a fork that could stop it? I mean, you could obviously remove op return, but you still have shitcoins on Bitcoin.
I mean, there would certainly be a whack-a-mole game where, you know, after we do, let's say we do
and some... you can't really do whack-a-mole soft forks. So soft forks are super difficult to pull off.
Correct.
And I think people have gotten a little bit spoiled. We haven't had that many soft forks, but people have gotten spoiled with the soft forks that we have.
Yeah.
They don't realize that, first of all, there's no really way to know if there's consensus ahead of time.
Yeah.
You're kind of winging it. You feel like there's consensus.
Yeah.
And if a significant portion, if there isn't consensus, you could have an inverted chain split after the fact.
Yeah, of course.
Which would just be chaotic. It'd be fine. Everyone, like, you could go to sleep and be fine if you have your funds in self-custody. But if you're running businesses and stuff, it'd be a fucking pain in the ass.
Yeah. So, like, aesthetically, I'm kind of like, I wish there was no spam.
Yeah.
I wish there was nothing. And then, you know, I also feel like there's something wrong with the Bitcoin Core process. But at the same time, like, Bitcoin Core does ship really nice things.
Yeah.
And a lot of the technologies that we're going to need, I mean, I'm getting closer to the belief that some form of confidence is something that I would like to see on Bitcoin. And the thing is, like, I've never been, like, fully closed-minded against confidence. I was just like, you know, like, kind of like with Taproot, it's like, with Arc, now it's like, oh, you can actually use Taproot to be, so Arc is a Taproot thing, right?
Yeah.
Taproot is, and I was like very skeptical of Taproot because, like, nobody is fucking using Taproot. Right. Like, only the shitcoiners are using Taproot. It's fucking retarded. Like, why did we even need Taproot?
Yeah.
The thing is, Bolts actually uses Taproot for the refund path, which is great. So Bolts actually implemented Taproot in a really nice way. So I was like, actually, Bolt Bitcoin is now a Taproot user,
right.
And with Arc is just full Taproot, right? So I'm like, okay, what the guys on Arc have done, it's kind of like, okay, right, so despite opening up some attack vector, we did gain Arc with Taproot, right? And then
with the attack vector is like cheaper spam, right?
Yeah, there was the inscriptions exploit, which was always possible, quote, quote, but obviously made...
It was significantly cheaper, right?
The barrier to spam was like reduced, let's call it, with Taproot somewhat, not fully, but somewhat. They could have spammed anyway on just SegWit without Taproot. But so I think, like, we core can, and this is the kind of thing that core can ship that very few other people can ship. Like, let's say to ship confidence onto Bitcoin is something that's very, very tricky, and even the core devs and Bitcoin devs in general, like, don't agree. And when we implement it, it's hardcore shit, man. It's like and so having like hardcore protocol crypto experts able to deliver that thing is nice. So I'm not gonna be upgrading to Bitcoin Core 30 until we've fixed. And what's funny?
You just got to do work on the cipher node side to remove the legacy wallet dependencies.
Yeah, and right? You know what's kind of
hilarious? You have some time to do that.
I mean, I was going to do that anyway. Eventually, we were going to switch to other stuff eventually. But you know, yeah, that's that's the essence of my opinion, is that it's over. The debate's over. You know, the gentleman's agreement was broken, and that's what it is.
Yeah, we I think I'm pretty much completely aligned on your opinion. And I've talked about this just at length for almost over a year now. Just been a massive DDoS on my time. But look, it's good that people care about Bitcoin so much.
Yeah.
I think we die based on apathy. Apathy is probably the single biggest risk to Bitcoin. Just real quick. So when we launched OpenSats, this was the main concern we had, was there was a very, maybe it's too strong of a word, but it felt kind of like incestuous funding path and core group. And we thought OpenSats could do something different and be more independent and be more transparent and be more open.
And
I think we've really accomplished that goal. We've provided over 300 grants, like really just tried to broaden the pie. And a lot of that, the overwhelming majority of that isn't for protocol work. For, you know, we're the largest supporter of BTC Pay Server now. We've done a lot of cashew support, tons of different mobile wallets, PayJoin. We helped start up their nonprofit. They have their own nonprofit now. And that's one of the things we want to see, like 1,000 flowers bloom. But for better or for worse, we found basically massive success. And now we're the heavyweight in the room. And so I'm getting a lot of flack, which is fine. Like, I understand, you know, people. And to be clear, the way we designed OpenSats is that I'm just one vote of nine votes. So like, I can't unilaterally push things through. But do you have any, there's a new narrative of just like funding any developers this way is bad. Do you have any like recommendations or opinions on how we proceed with OpenSats? Like, what's the best path for Bitcoin going forward on that front?
I think OpenSats failed a very much needed narrative and an operational space, which is that the protocol devs were like, they're, to improve Bitcoin, you can do other types of software, which is not protocol development, like like the ones that you named. And before OpenSats, I think like the Bitcoin Core, if you wanted to fund the Bitcoin, you would just fund Bitcoin Core devs. And what OpenSats is, was fund the application layer, which is the one that is, that I'm most interested in. You know, I wish there was more private companies doing that, right? And like I will say that that's one of my biggest, my pride is that like all of the software that we do is funded by us, right? So like the Bolt's Rust library, which is used by a bunch of these new wallets, that's us. Like, we maintain a bunch of open source software. You know, PayJoin, I paid my devs to work on PayJoin. I paid, I financed, you know, I did like little private grants to like Joinster and like a bunch of shit like that. I wish a lot of more people would do it, but apparently they don't. I am actually like kind of like a little concerned that that I'm competing with OpenSats for like employees. So, but you know, it is what it is.
We
like,
pay them less than people realize, though.
We
intentionally don't publicly say what our highest grant amount is, because people would just apply for the highest. It's not that high.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that high. But you know, Bull Bitcoin is also not like a VC funded company, so we like, you know.
That's an ethical. I like the choice.
I think a lot of Bull Bitcoin devs take a pay cut working at Bull Bitcoin.
But I would also say, like, look, my dream is similar to your dream, because I actually have to go out there as a volunteer and try and raise donations, which is not sustainable. And I think it's much more sustainable, and I'm a capitalist, to have private companies doing this, and that's where the 1031 side comes in. Right, because we're one of the few VCs that actually fund full open source stack companies like Start9 or Mempool.space, Primal. And the dream there is like actually sustainable, profitable businesses that contribute to open source. And I would just say on that front too, while I really respect that you're a completely bootstrapped operation, as a Bitcoin-focused open source VC, there's also not that much money there either.
No, right. No, for sure.
It's not LightSpark's $165 million seed round.
And to be very clear, like, I love what you guys are doing, and you know, fuck the haters. They could go fuck themselves. It's you know, if you're not building anything, your opinion matters very little to me, right? And like, you know, you guys are not specifically building shit, but you're enabling builders. And like, you know, there's a really good example, for example, is Payjohn. Like Payjohn is a great example where like we contributed a little bit to it, but for Payjohn to go from V0 to V1 to V2 to the release of V2 to go to V3, like that's a 4 to 5 year effort in total that required, I don't know how many people, and to go to V3 is gonna also take like, you know, 2 to 3 to 4, like almost like full-time people to like to get there. And even for a company like Bulbic, it's like, it's above my budget to fund the entire Payjohn thing. Like I can't, you know, I have other employees, you know, that I have to take care of. So a lot of these things like kind of like wouldn't happen. And even stuff like Arcade and like, you know, who knows how they're going to make money. It's very, very experimental. But I think that, you know, there is money to be made in open source software. We're very fortunate at Bull Bitcoin that we have, you know, the only profitable business model in the space, which is like Bitcoin brokerage.
Buy, sell Bitcoin.
Yeah, buy or sell Bitcoin.
Charge a reasonable fee.
Yeah, exactly. And like, there's others, but like, you know, there's others, but you know, mostly that's the one. And then, I use open source as a marketing tool.
Yeah.
Right. So, and it's not just for that, obviously. Like I do it because like out of ego, out of pride, and out of a sincere desire to help Bitcoin and to do something.
And it's where we hold the line. Right. Open source software is where we hold the line.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's foundational. It's the core of the freedom movement.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And it's also really fun, to be perfectly honest. Like as someone who's dealt with governments and banks and, you know, running a Bitcoin exchange, it's just an endless stream of problems. Like every day I wake up, I open my phone and it's just like problem. But like what I have found with open source is this really satisfying, purely creative, unrestrained, like you can do anything in open source development and you don't need to ask anybody's permission. And like the sky is the fucking limit. Like software is magic. You know, the more I discover open source software, the more I'm just like happy, you know. So working in open source software is what allows me to swallow the shit of like the fiat world of running an exchange, is like knowing that at least half of my day is going to be interesting, which is the half of my day where I'm working with the open source devs.
I love it. Francis, this was great. Let's do this more often.
Yeah, totally, man.
Okay, get some upstairs.
Thanks so much, man. All right.
Freaks, I hope you enjoyed that. Hopefully I'll get some more in-person rips while I'm here in Lugano. Maybe I won't, not sure. But stay humble, stack sats. Peace.